Guys, welcome to episode 18 of the 51-yard line, taping this on Wednesday, April, I don't know, 29th? Yeah, hey,
29th.
I got it right. All right, so, wow, we got a huge weekend ahead of us. A lot of things to discuss, not a lot of time. Got to make this one a little bit quicker. So, real quick, let me address one thing that I just remembered I wanted to bring up to you guys. I don't think any of us really follow UFC that closely, but there was a big UFC-related story that came out today. John Jones, the most recent, the reigning light heavyweight champion of the world, was stripped of his title yesterday.
I did read that.
And suspended indefinitely by the UFC. UFC president Dana White said it was an unfortunate situation, but it was something that they had to do for the sake of their sports reputation. And I just wanted to touch real quickly and just say how impressed I am with Dana White for having the balls to do something that it doesn't seem like any other commissioner slash president slash whatever you want to call him of any sport has the wherewithal to do.
Yeah. So I think you hit it on the head. They don't have the stones to do it. I mean, it's really, really difficult. It seems like for any major, I mean, if you want to call it the big three, basketball, football, baseball, or big four if you want to throw in, I suppose, hockey in there.
Sure.
But for the most part, you know, the best players usually bring you the most money. And there's never really any – I mean, obviously the NFL has not shown any sort of contrition about keeping its probably most heinous athletes off the field in its league. Same can be said, I suppose – of baseball. Obviously, Alex Rodriguez is still swinging a bat, and he's one home run shy of tying Willie Mays here. So, yeah, I would agree. That
sacrilege, by the way.
Was it substance abuse that he got busted for?
Originally.
Oh, that's what it was.
Hit and run. Originally, his last offense, right after his fight against his title fight against Daniel Cormier, he tested positive for cocaine. No repercussions from that. It's a felony hit and run charge. He surrendered on Monday evening, and Tuesday evening it was decided that he would be stripped of his title and suspended. And the fight that he was supposed to have May 23rd to defend his title, Daniel Cormier, the man he beat for the title, will replace him. So I just thought that was a great, great move by Dana White, a guy I have my issues with in terms of how he respects, or lack thereof, respects his fighters, and doesn't pay them nearly enough, especially his especially the female fighters. But that's another story. So yeah, I just wanted to say that real quick. Christian, you wanted to bring up something about this Hack-a-Jordan situation, correct?
Yeah, this is kind of a dual wielding thing. Me and Steve both had an extensive discussion regarding the Spurs and Clippers, Game 5 in particular, but this has been going on, obviously, all series.
Sure.
Just, obviously, one of the go-tos and hallmarks of the San Antonio Spurs has been their hack-a-shack tactics. This series, it's been DeAndre Jordan. And I think I'm going to let Steve field his opinion on it first.
I think it's a bullshit tactic. It's stupid, and it ruins the game. It's an insult to the fans that come to watch it. It's an insult to your players that you have out there on the court that you think they can't get the job done. The only way you can have a chance at winning is fouling a guy intentionally who sucks at free throws. I know what you're saying, and you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. A guy who gets paid millions of dollars to play, in essence, a kid's game that we all grew up playing, should be able to make free throws. Yep. If you're getting paid that much money to play a game, learn how to do free throws. I agree with that, but I still think the actual quote-unquote strategy, if that's what you want to call it, is total bullshit, and it's an insult to the game. And Popovich should be ashamed of himself for utilizing it, because a coach of his caliber and his brain power should not have to resort to that to win a game. It insults him and his players and his team when he does that.
For me, I'm with Steve in kind of the spirit of the thing, just because, like, it made the game really boring for stretches, for one thing. Nobody wants to watch a free throw clinic. It just wasn't exciting. And when DeAndre Jordan went to the bench, as, you know, Doc Rivers' response, the game really heated up, and it got turned into a barn burner, and obviously it delivered at the end. But the issue I have is the NBA just needs to outlaw it. They need to pass a rule that says you can't intentionally foul a player like that, you know, and just grab someone away from the ball. I think what the rule should be is you can't grab someone deliberately who's not in possession of the basketball. you know, fouling someone who has the ball at the end of the game, I think that's fine because that's about stopping the clock and it's about your last breath. But as long, so I think it needs to go, but as long as it is in the rule book, I don't see, I understand why Greg Popovich is taking advantage of it. It's a very, very simple tactic. It is obviously much more simple than, you know, Greg Popovich because he's a master strategist. He's got, you know, sets and strategies that are far beyond that. But the bottom line is you got a guy who's shooting 39% from the free throw line and you can steal possessions from them and you're not getting penalized for it. Do it. I mean, you know, and until then, and it also neutralizes them because they got to put DeAndre Jordan on the bench, which robs them of their top defensive player. I think it's a sound strategy. I just think it should just go as a rule, if that makes sense.
I think it's something, though, that teams can overcome if they have decent perimeter shooters. The main issue has been for the, I mean, they shot 1-for-14 behind the three-point line the other night. That if they shot even 30%, they probably win that game.
Oh, they definitely win
so,
that game.
So, like, in that case, Pop's kind of making it easy on the Clippers. I mean, when that's going on, it should mean, and this is how the Lakers countered it, you kick it out to Kobe, or you kick it out to Rick Fox, or you kick it out to Ori. Like, the Clippers, you're right, it is a shitty rule. It hurts the product the same way that it hurts, you know, the way flopping hurts the product of basketball.
Right.
But the Clippers can't overcome it, and they're not shooting very well.
Yeah.
They're not making great decisions as well
in
the offensive end.
They're shooting themselves in the foot, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, they have an opportunity. They certainly had an opportunity in their last game to really make Pop look stupid for trying to go that route. And
oh, yeah.
They fumbled away all those opportunities from what I saw.
Honestly, I thought from watching the whole game, I thought that the Hackett Jordan actually kind of hurt the Spurs because he started doing it whenever they started to build a lead. So just kind of like make sure the Clippers don't have any rhythm at all. But it kind of wrecked his own team's rhythm. The Spurs, when they get hot, they can't miss. And it cut their momentum a bunch of times. That's why they didn't do it at the end.
And in the end, DeAndre Jordan did cost him the game.
Yeah, in a very different way.
It's a rough way to lose.
That Griffin shot was going in.
And it was going in. You look at it
before he
touched
it. Griffin had a game winner there.
I really felt for Clippers fans. That sucks.
Oh, that was a brutal
loss. That sucks.
Brutal.
They've
lost two games like that. The Clippers should have won this series 4-1, if not for two crazy endings on their home court.
I'm pretty sure DeAndre has done that more in his career than probably almost any player in history.
Right. Can't help himself.
He's up around the rim the whole time.
He needs to stop. He barely grazed it.
He got his index finger on it. That was it.
You could tell, like, once he got up to the rim, you could see he was like, oh, shoot.
If the Spurs do win, and it's not set in stone yet, but if they do win, I mean, you know, good for you. But you did it on pure luck, and you did it on hacking a player. So good luck doing that shit against the Rockets. Yeah, good luck doing that shit against, you know, James Harden. And
they'll do it to Howard.
They'll do it to Dwight.
They'll do it to Howard. And you know what? I'll still be back here going, you guys are pathetic.
And you know what, though? They will do it with Dwight, but I'm telling you right now, the Rockets are not shooting 1-for-15 or 1-for-14 behind the line.
That's why I can't wait to see that series.
Like that's going to make it a lot more difficult than to just chip away. Plus, right now, with the way Houston's got this whole Josh Smith, Dwight Howard thing going on, it's not super. I don't think it's going to be as simple as just hacking away at Dwight.
Not at all.
Because then you got to still play.
Well, Dwight's going to. I think he's going to bitch around Tim Duncan. I really think so.
Oh, yeah.
That's not personal hatred either. That's just me talking the way I've watched Dwight Howard play against Dallas.
Yeah.
He's playing aggressive. There was some vintage Dwight Howard out there, man. Just really aggressive, really boxing the hell out of you, wrestling for the ball.
I still think he's soft.
I think this next series is gonna you can say he's soft, whatever. Sure. I think this next series he's really gonna come out and shut the hell.
Shut
a lot of people up in that.
Fair enough.
I don't know. The moment we see some adversity on the defensive end,
he's a quitter.
Dwight quits, dude. That's why I've never had any respect for the man. Like, I'm sorry. At times he's one of the best players, arguably, but the man quits too often. I just don't believe in him.
He can barrel through an old, broken down.
This
Tyson
is the
Chandler.
First time that he's been past the first round since 2010, I think, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. 2010 was when they lost the Celtics.
And,
this
is the first time James Harden has been past the first round since they went to the finals with OKC.
Yep, that's right. This is put up or shut up time for those two.
It's going to be an interesting series.
And for McHale. McHale's not had a whole lot of postseason success. Now they've got a shot. They got the home court advantage on the Spurs or the Clippers, whoever gets through.
Yeah.
But still, a bullshit strategy. Insult to the game. Popovich should be ashamed of himself. And I even heard him say, yeah, I feel bad doing it, but I'm doing it anyway. It's like, okay, cool.
I agree with everything you're saying.
Unfortunately,
I still, to be honest though, with how old his team is and if they're really going to make another run at a championship, he's got to take any tactic that he can. So,
I could never say that
I disrespect him for doing the tactic, because when you have that, when you have a team that is like, they're overmatched when it comes to
their youth.
A lot of mileage on that team. A lot of mileage on players who have to play most of the game.
Yep.
Duncan played 39 minutes last night. Like, that's the most he's played in all year. Like,
and still was
so
magnificent.
Absolutely. But he can't, like, Pop knows they can't sustain that if they have to do at the most 21 more games. Like, you'd implement any strategy possible to win if you were in the same situation.
That's a strategy.
You're right.
I'm going to keep reiterating that every time. I'll tell you
about this, though. As far as what you were talking about, a good point about the Spurs being tired. I think if the Spurs don't win Game 6 and close it out, even if they win Game 7 against the Clippers, you know, if they screw it up at home, I don't think they're beating the Rockets. I think they need that rest. They are clear. I mean,
I do too.
Tony Parker and Ginobili are banged up. Thiago Splitter is completely dead on his feet.
He just shouldn't even be on the
floor. And
Danny
Green is just
playing. Yeah, how about Danny Green?
He's terrible. He's horrible.
He's got the yips, dude. Like, he literally can't make a bucket.
I couldn't believe
he
didn't make that three at the end. He had a wide open look in the corner. I mean, that's the thing.
He's
had
a
all series.
Yeah. Well, yeah, all series, but a particularly shitty night.
I mean, during the season and the previous two playoffs, he's just been automatic and just, I don't know what is wrong with him.
Patty Mills has been the savior of that squad.
Or
he's
got
a
bench. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yep. DL closed,
closed
the game
but,
for him.
But even DL, before last night, he hadn't been doing dick from a shooting standpoint. Like, he made two huge shots last night, but that whole game, I don't think he made a shot before that.
And if the Clippers lose this series, it's because they lost it in San Antonio. They lost it more than San Antonio won it.
I agree with that.
They made so many mistakes.
I think the Clippers are
stupid mistakes. Yeah. Game two. You literally just had to dribble the ball. If need be, to avoid getting fouled, throw it away to someone else.
That was the Griffin turnover.
That was rough for him, though, because he had a brilliant game, a triple-double. And
he knew he screwed up, too, because he literally sat there on the floor and put his hands on his head like, I just gave the game away.
It's hard to be so upset with him. Because that spin move's been sort of his, like, it's been pretty vicious since coming back. And
you saw what he did to Aaron Baines with it. Yeah. I mean, whew.
Absolutely.
But yeah, the bottom line is just the Clippers, just there's something about them. You see it every playoffs. They screw up at the end. I don't know if they're the ultimate head case team. They really are. And I include I even include Chris Paul in that. Chris Paul is the best pure point guard in the game, but he is not mentally tough.
What happened with that technical foul?
He chucked the ball at the ref rather than, like, toss it to him, and then he said something, I think. Like, it was a weak technical. It was a bad, they should have let it go at that stage in the game, but, you know, it was just a stupid move. That irked me. Why would you do that?
Well, I agree, but it irked me.
Because he's screaming at them all the time. He works the refs, and they don't like it.
Well,
you watch the game, he's always in their ear.
And I agree. He should have the wherewithal and the veteran leadership and the presence to keep his emotions in check. That's not something you would see, you know, the great NBA leaders in history do with the game on the line like that.
Yeah.
He's
a 10-year player.
You're watching a great game unfold, and then the refs. And granted, you know, it didn't end up hurting the end of the game. It was still a thriller. It was still a barn burner.
Oh, yeah,
but
they only got one point out of it.
Well, and I felt like in that moment, it was just like it. But that kind of thing just kills momentum, and it's just like, Louise. It's the same thing. We've talked about it. It's the same thing with baseball umps. I don't like that kind of entitlement from officiating.
Look, I mean, I'm with you. I mean, I thought it was a stupid time.
Pull them aside and establish a warning.
How do you know they didn't, though? You know, you don't know why they did. The refs in that game were pretty good. I didn't see many bad calls or decisions at all. I assumed if they were going to team up at that point in the game, there was a reason for it.
Fair enough.
There were some shit calls against the Clippers, though.
Now
that I'm thinking about it, like you guys talking about, there were some like pretty unfortunate calls against the Clippers.
Crappy.
I mean, so much so, you know, Doc Rivers got fined another $25,000 for talking shit about the refs, you know, again. So,
which is funny because he opened his. I saw the press conference. He opened it with, "You guys know I don't like to complain," and then he just proceeded.
He loves to complain. I say that with all the love for Doc. He does complain.
Just to wrap it up on these guys, If Doc Rivers is going to get fined for complaining about the way refs are officiating, I think refs should be fined for bad play calls or bad rulings on the field. I think they should be fined because that can cost a team a game. And if you make a bad call,
Swallow their whistles.
Exactly. But if you know that that can be coming on any given night, dude, you're not gonna make any call that might be controversial, and which in the end might end up being the right call. But I don't think you can go that far.
In this day and age, though, with the instant replay, there's no reason you should have a bad call. I don't think.
Yeah, but rules aren't set up so you can replay.
I was gonna say
play because that would just make a game 5 hours long.
I still think it's such bullshit because the frustration is there, and you should be frustrated if you feel it's a bad call and you know it's a bad call, and the refs are just going, nope, we're right. You know what? If you're going to get fined for saying that, you know what? They should get fined for a shit call. If you have video evidence that proves that was a bad call, that it should have been overturned or whatever, they should be fined. Because more often in football, I think, more so than basketball, but bad calls can cost you a game.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. And that can be bad depending on where your team sits. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, just sports, though, man. If you do it for one sport, you're going to have to figure out a way to do it for every sport, and that's just not going to happen.
That's fine, but I think it should happen, me personally speaking. That's all I'm saying. Whether it happens or not, that's just what I think.
All right, let's move on. I don't remember who K-Love? Else had something. Yeah, let's talk about K-Love.
Cavs
announced today that he had surgery in NYC to repair his shoulder, and he is out 4 to 6 months. So 2 days ago, we're talking like maybe he'll be back for the Eastern Conference Finals if they go, and now it comes out there's no chance in hell that he's playing. So what does this do to the Cavs?
Up in smoke. I mean, to me, this just affirms, and this goes back to the entire Eastern Conference right now, nobody from the East is winning the championship.
Nope.
I mean, this is one weapon. They don't have enough firepower now, the Cavs, to beat anybody who comes out of the West. And with the Hawks and the Bulls struggling to put away their series, you know, with substandard lower seed East teams, I just don't see anybody, you know, coming out of there who's going to be a championship contender. But the Cavs could still very well win the East.
Well, remember what happened last year, man. I mean, like, last year there was a bunch of teams that were pulling off upsets. I don't mean to bring it up, Tyler, but the Pacers and the Hawks, went all the way to Game 7. And look, I mean, the Pacers still played strong against the Wizards. And look at the Spurs. The Spurs and the Mavs went to a Game 7. And then look how the Spurs played against the Trailblazers and so on and so forth.
Right.
So, I mean,
but those are way, way, all those are more talented teams than these current lower-seeded East teams, I'd say.
Fair enough. But, I mean, I think the lower-seeded teams are more hungry than the top-seed teams because they don't want to get swept. No one wants
definitely
to get swept.
That's
so
definitely
true. I think they play harder than the top-seeded teams.
Boston certainly played harder than the Cavs did for the majority of that series.
They wanted to win one.
But it's just they stagnate on offense, and as soon as they get within five, Cavs would be like, oh yeah, we should probably play this game.
Right. See, I don't think it necessarily, and this could be just me, I think losing Kevin Love now, after knowing that you don't have J.R. Smith for two games, does change things up. If J.R. Smith had not been suspended, I'm just going to be honest with you. I know he had a really good... He closed out, what was it, Game 3 Kevin Love did with some big shots. That was a big game for him. I just don't... He doesn't, like, Tyler, you brought it up. He doesn't fit in that offense.
To be fair, though, I mean, it's like even at the end of the day, he still finished as a 16-10 guy. Like,
oh, yeah.
And there were only, I want to say I heard the stat, it was like there were only 7 or 8 16-10 guys in the entire league. Right. So it's just like at the end of the day, they figured it out. Like,
right,
up until 2 months ago, I would have been like, oh, Kevin Love got injured? They'll be fine.
Right.
But now I'm like, oh, Kevin Love got injured? I don't know, man. I mean, their offensive efficiency, like, it goes down the drain. Like, they're a plus 6.5 from a point standpoint over their opponents when he's on the floor.
Yep.
They're a minus 1.5 when he's off the floor. So,
I mean, I guess
a loss, no question about
that. I mean, I've got some bias. I don't have a lot of, you know, positive feelings towards Kevin Love. I just, A, don't think he fits in the system. B, LeBron has been here before, having to play without a member of his quote-unquote big three.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I think it affects them more. Like I said, it definitely affects them, especially because they don't have J.R. Smith. But I don't know if I saw Kevin Love being super, super effective beyond the first round. A, because he doesn't have the experience. And B, I don't think he fits in that system, and I don't think he asserts himself. And I think it would have been Chris Bosh syndrome year one with the Heat Big Three. I really do. That's just me. We'll never know. So I guess that's all super, super hypothetical. It definitely hurts them, but I think it only really truly hurts them because now they don't have him or J.R. Smith
for the first two games. They're in big trouble if they play the Bulls without Love. Because that's who they get, right? If the Bulls come through, it's a 2-3 matchup. Or the Bucks.
All due respect. I mean, it's a possibility.
It certainly is.
But listen, I mean, you're talking about a front line of Noah and Gasol. You need your bigs for that. And, you know, Love is an offensive threat that they need.
But he brought it up. They don't use Love like that in that system anymore. They really don't.
Love like what?
Like, as a big man. Like, he's not going to be banging it down or banging around or getting boards.
Listen, I'm saying he's an offensive threat at the four position, no matter where he is. He can draw them away from the basket,
he's the epitome of a stretch four. And now they lose their small ball lineup because he's not on the floor.
Small ball is how you beat the Bulls. They pack the lane.
Completely agree. On the offensive end, absolutely. I think the Bulls would knock the shit out of him. And I just think they would on the other end.
I agree.
I just don't.
See, but with Kevin Love on the floor, you can play that slash and kick game that the Cavs have become with that lineup. When you've got Kyrie, when you've got JR, when you've got LeBron, when you've got K-Love, and you've got Timofey or even Tristan Thompson on the floor, you've only got one big man taking up that lane. So you can play the slash and kick game really easily. But when you've got two big guys clogging the middle, which they're going to have to do now, you lose all opportunity to do that. And you also lose your second best three-point shooter.
100% agree. Right. I still just think if they had J.R. Smith, I would absolutely be like, I don't think this changes much. I really, really don't.
The Bulls are playing the last couple games, I would probably agree with you. But if the Bulls get back to anywhere near what they were doing in the first three games, I think with JR out for the first two games of the series, I think they split 1-1.
And that takes the home court. Yeah, that's huge.
Assuming they play the Bulls, they split 1-1.
Yeah.
So hypothetically speaking, if
the Bucks play, they take one too.
Absolutely. So,
I don't know if the Bucks take one in Cleveland.
Oh, no, I meant if they get one, it's still the home court advantage. Whoever the Cavs play, they have home court.
Okay, that's interesting.
I know that we were planning on once we know. Is it now official that we know exactly what the second round matchups are?
No, we don't. No.
Okay.
Not everyone. No.
That being said, this might be jumping the gun a little bit early. Cavs, Bulls, who you got in how many games?
Bulls in six.
Bulls in six?
Mm-hmm.
Christian, how about you, buddy?
I think that's right, actually. I agree with that. Love and JR out for two games, I think it's Bulls in six.
Papa Bear.
I'm still going to give it to the Cavs in seven.
Okay.
All right. No, it's...
I mean...
That would be my guess.
Four out of seven games, Kyrie and LeBron can carry it.
Yeah.
And with JR back, and Amon Shumpert locking down whoever he needs to lock down on defense.
I think Kyrie's going to collapse mentally.
You think so?
Mentally.
He's what?
Kyrie's going to collapse mentally.
That's really going to... But if he
when
does...
When you go up against a dominating team, like an intimidating team like the Chicago Bulls,
call them intimidating these last couple games, man.
Maybe not the way they've been playing, but just their demeanor. The way Jimmy Butler stares down his... the way Derrick Rose can do it. Gasol... You're playing guys that are insanely hungry and that hate the leader of your team. They hate him, and they're going to do anything they can to stop him from advancing.
But that's LeBron.
That's LeBron, but you know what? It filters into everybody else.
Yeah.
Just like when they played the Heat. LeBron's
the
there,
Bulls
filters
hate the
into
Cavs.
Everybody.
I just think that's been around.
Joakim Noah's been talking that noise.
And remember, they hated
ever since he got there.
They hated the Cavs before LeBron went to Miami.
I was going
to
say.
Like that was a rivalry before he went.
Oh, yeah, Michael Jordan.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah, Jordan ruining their lives.
That's a heated rivalry, and I think that I just think Kyrie's going to collapse mentally. I really do. Just like every time they went to South Beach, where was Kyrie? Brick.
See, I would argue that I think Jimmy Butler is going to collapse mentally. When he has to deal with Amon Shumpert, there's going to be at least one game, I think, where he's in single digits.
I would love that. I would laugh. I hate both teams.
Because I like Jimmy Butler a lot. I like Jimmy Butler a lot, but he...
God, he's cool.
He has not had the experience
except when he's
leading this offense.
That was pretty brutal.
Which I would say, I would argue that he is leading this offense, not Derrick Rose.
Oh, yeah, he does.
He's been in this
is.
Position before, that's for sure. Where he's
Butler's been their best player all year.
Exactly. But I still think Amon Shumpert is one of the best perimeter defenders in the league right now.
Oh, yeah.
And he shuts. Did you see what he did to Isaiah Thomas in games 3 and 4?
Oh, I saw that.
Made him. I'm sorry, man, but he made him look like he was a 9 or 10 coming off the bench playing against him. Like, he just made him look like he was nothing in games 3 and 4.
Isaiah Thomas.
He can do that to Jimmy
Butler.
I'm not saying that, yeah. But Isaiah Thomas, from the day he got to Boston, he was putting up 19, 20, 22 a game, and he held him to what, 5, and then like 12 yeah. in the final two games after going 22 and 22 in the first two. Come on, Amon Shumpert can do that to Jimmy Butler.
Oh yeah,
it's gonna come down to mental toughness, I think.
Quick segue off of you. So Steve believes Kyrie is going to have a collapse
mentally. Yeah.
That so I guess what that leads to is, what does that do if he does? What does that do to the value of Kevin Love to the Cleveland Cavaliers? And will we see him in a Cavs uniform ever again?
No, he's gone.
I agree.
He's gone.
I don't think it makes a difference.
I mean, if
he's out and Kyrie caves, I don't think Kyrie caved because Love was gone.
No, okay, no. I apologize. Maybe I should rephrase it. I guess what I'm trying to get at is, if Kyrie collapses, how important try and get Love long term, or do you still feel like it's just it doesn't work?
I think they can get a couple of really good players for Love's contract.
But that's the thing,
and then
his contract's up after this year. He becomes a free agent.
Right, yeah. But I mean, they just wouldn't be paying him. Period.
Okay.
If he whether they trade him or they sign, there's just cap space that they can use to bring.
See right there, Jimmy Butler and Derrick Rose, again, game 5 loss against the Bucks combined 10 for 41. If the Bucks can do that to that backcourt, imagine what the Cavs can do.
Look at my man John Henson Swanum.
I don't think it matters whether Kyrie has the greatest series in the history of basketball or the worst series in the history of basketball. It doesn't change. They've already made up their mind about Love one way or the other.
I don't think he's coming back. They're,
you know,
just
what?
Not sending
they either have loved the past 2 months, which have admittedly been fantastic, even with Kevin Love on the floor, especially with Kevin Love on the floor. As I just mentioned, they're way more efficient from an offensive standpoint with them on the floor. Or they decided 4 months ago that they were just like, this isn't going to work for another year. He's gone. Whatever happens to Kyrie in this series, it doesn't mean a lick of difference.
I agree with that.
Kevin Love, yeah.
I think his fate is sealed.
Gotcha.
Agreed.
And he wants it sealed. He wants to get the hell out of there.
Yeah, he's not feeling the love at all.
He's definitely going to L.A., right? Like, that's got to be the most likely thing.
Oh, man. That
Rondo, he'll be the man.
Thing that they're talking about.
I mean, like, but
if
Kobe,
he, fellas.
Well, I was gonna say you would only have to deal with Kobe for what, one more year, and then
it would be like 12 games.
It would be the Kevin Love show pretty much after that.
Rondo too.
Rondo. Just
oh no, I know,
so
but
they went 30 games.
I would say the post.
Oh, he's not, but I mean,
Love.
It's not just gonna be him though. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. The schemers.
Talking about the Clips.
The Los Angeles schemers.
All right, let's switch gears. I mean,
draft.
We got two other big things to talk about that are coming up this weekend. I do want to talk about the draft for a few minutes.
Sure.
Let's just real quick touch on this huge fight we got going on.
Yeah.
It's the fight of
our
decade.
First century. Yeah.
Mayweather-Pacquiao, man. It's happening finally, May 2nd. Which is this coming Saturday. Undercard starts at 3 Pacific time, and I believe the main event starts at 5 Pacific time. So that's 8 Eastern time, 14 Indian time, whatever. I don't fucking know. I don't know if they're getting that fight or not.
Nice.
But, yeah.
Going
man,
the extra mile, reaching out to our overseas audience.
I also don't even think
everyone
that that's the correct time that I just
hey,
made.
You know, you're still reaching
out. If
you're
watching the Philippines, why not?
Absolutely they will.
Yeah, so none of us are boxing aficionados by any standpoint, but I just want to get everybody's quick little thoughts on what they think this outcome of this fight is going to be. Actually, you know, I've got a great way to do this. Who wins? Is there a knockout? How many rounds in, or is it a decision?
I don't know much about boxing. I think this fight is going to go the distance. I think it's going to be 10 rounds. I think it's going to come down to decision. I think I'm going Pacquiao. And I'm going with Pacquiao. I like the humility. Nah. And I just love the way he loves to sing karaoke. And I just love that about him. That has nothing to do with his athleticism, boxing, his reach, his extension, whatever. I don't know anything about any of this. I'm just going with Pacquiao. I think the fight's going to go the distance. That's what I'm going with.
I would pretty much say the exact same thing. I'd throw in the fact that he's also an elected official.
He is an elected
public official. I love that because that's just awesome. But I'm going to throw a hitch in this. I think that, and once again, not a boxing expert by any means. I do know that Floyd Mayweather is known primarily for his defense and counterattack. I think because of this hype, because of all the noise that's been around it for years, I think Floyd Mayweather tries to go a little offensive in this thing. I think he really wants to knock Pacquiao out. And I think that means he's going to make a mistake. I think Pacquiao knocks him out in the ninth round. I'm going down on a limb and I say he knocks him out in the ninth
round. That'd be epic. That would be so epic.
And you hear the screams across the planet.
Oh my God.
Everybody reacting. I know that's a huge long shot, but I'm going to go with it. I say Pacquiao knocks him out in the ninth.
Steve?
I think Pacquiao will win, but if in order for him to win, I think it's going to have to come down to a decision. I don't think he knocks out Mayweather. I don't think Mayweather knocks him out. I don't even know if anybody's going to get knocked down. I don't know. I mean, if anybody's going to get knocked down, it's Manny, but I know Manny, if he gets knocked down, he's going to get back up. It's going to have to come
down to a
decision.
Except for that one time Marquez popped him.
Yes.
He didn't get up from that.
Well, I mean, true, but if Pacquiao wins, it's going to come down to a decision. I really do think so. I don't think it's going to come down to a knockout on either side. I don't see a scenario where that happens. I mean, they're both – look how fast Manny is, though. Look how fast he is. And the faster you are, your hits don't hit as hard. It's the slow punches that come in with a lot of momentum that really knock your ass out. And Manny doesn't really have a heavy hit, so that's why I don't see him knocking out Mayweather. Mayweather, I think, has a better chance of doing it, especially if one of Manny's punches goes in too far to the left and Mayweather comes back.
Oh, yeah, he's got to attack smart.
If his counterattack hits, that's
Mayweather's game man counterpunching. That's what he thrives on. He wants his opponent to come in with something like that so that he can dodge it and then just come back with the fucking haymaker.
So, I mean, saying that and actually saying it out loud, you know, it makes me question it, but at the end, I really do think it's going to be Manny. I think Manny has the bigger heart. And also, this is, in my opinion, good guy, bad guy fight.
Oh, yeah.
I agree. That's not an opinion. That's just facts.
Stephen A. Smith would disagree. He's been riding that guy's dick for a long time.
Stephen A. is an idiot. Mayweather's been convicted of abuse, and Manny Pacquiao is like as big of a hero as there's been in boxing.
I completely agree.
It's definitely a good guy, bad guy.
It's a good guy, bad guy. So I'm going with the good guy. I think it's going to come down to a decision.
Tyler, what are you thinking, man?
To me, I've been watching a lot of Manny fights lately. I've been watching a lot of Mayweather fights lately, and what these two are coming together to do reminds me of the Rumble in the Jungle between Muhammad Ali and George Foreman, where everyone was just like, let me get to that.
Yeah.
Where everyone was just like, George Foreman was a 24-year-old undefeated. Ali was 32. He had lost his last three fights, I believe. No one thought that Ali could win this fight. George Foreman was talking about how he had dreams of killing a man in the ring.
And he almost killed Frazier.
He almost killed Foreman. Yeah, exactly. You get to the fight, and it's looking like it's Foreman from the beginning. But
rope-a-dope.
Ali, man, sticking to that rope-a-dope strategy.
He's genius.
Wearing George Foreman down. Whispering in George Foreman's ear, is that all you got? Is that all you got? And I'm sure some way more obscene things that couldn't be repeated by
vintage trash talk.
Yeah, just a lot of trash talk. And you get to the eighth round, and George Foreman barely has his legs underneath him. He's throwing punches as hard as you and I would throw punches. Like, he just doesn't have it, and that's when Ali strikes. He gets him with a solid right and just puts him down, and that's the end of the fight. Now you're probably thinking, based on what I just said, that I'm thinking that Mayweather is Foreman and Pacquiao is Ali.
But that's not
the way they play, though. Yeah. That's not the way they box, though. I think Mayweather, to a lesser extent, employs that rope-a-dope type defensive strategy because that's what he's known for. Like I said, he's known for counterpunching. He's known for biding his time, figuring out what his opponent's doing, figuring out what his opponent thinks he can do to Mayweather, and that's when Mayweather strikes. He doesn't watch film of his opponents. He's never watched film of Manny because he doesn't want any past fights to influence what he thinks Manny's going to do. He wants to study Manny in the midst of the fight, figure out what Manny's thinking, and then do the exact opposite and then put Manny down. I say this goes 9 rounds. Knockout Mayweather. Yep. Ooh.
Man. Yeah, no, when you think about this, I mean, this could be the biggest sporting event in the 21st century.
Well, Saturday in general is going to be the biggest sporting event. Saturday, you got the Derby, you got the fight, you got NBA playoffs. Like,
I mean, you got the last day of the draft.
You pity the fools who are going to be watching the Derby.
You also got free comic book day. That's not related to sports, but hey, it's still cool.
It's Saturday.
It's a good and it's also a Saturday.
All three of you picked Pacquiao, right?
Yeah. Though I know how much of a limb I'm going.
Yeah. Okay. We're aware.
I might still put money on Pacquiao, but for the sake of this, I'm going Mayweather.
Sure.
Okay, let's just spend a few minutes talking about the other big event of the next couple days, which is 2015 NFL Draft.
Sweet.
So I kind of wanted to do this. NFL.com released their most recent first round of their mock draft today. So I kind of want to just touch on a few players where NFL.com, specifically Mike Mayock, a great analyst over at NFL.com, thinks these guys are going. Let's just talk about that for a few minutes. Man. I don't know how much time we really need to spend on Jameis. Jameis is going to Tampa Bay.
Be crazy if he did.
Unless he said something like, I don't want to go to Tampa Bay and fuck your mother. Like, there's no way he's
pretty
not
much
going
what
to
John Elway did to Baltimore.
Or Eli Manning.
I feel like
I'm not going to San Diego.
I feel like everybody's trying to create speculation that Tampa Bay is, you know, seriously listening, this and that. I think Lovey, from the way Lovey Smith has talked about Jameis, he sounds comfortable drafting Jameis. I think Lovey's the type of coach that doesn't fear the off the field problems because he feels like he can get guys to want to play for them. So I think it's absolutely a number one Jameis Winston.
Agreed.
I think it's definitely Jameis Winston. Would be shocking as all hell if they traded it away.
Or they got Mariota instead.
I see, and there's been talk of that. I just don't see.
It's a dumb decision.
I
just hate Winston.
No,
I
was gonna say there's. I don't think there's a lot of Winston love at this table here, but.
Or anywhere.
Nope. I just think it sounds like the front office is too sold, and I think that you really gotta love the idea of Mike Evans and famous Jameis hooking up.
Sure.
I think that that's something that they absolutely want. Jameis.
Yep. So two is projected Mariota to the Titans.
Good move.
I don't think that they're keeping that pick.
I agree.
I think they like Zach Mettenberger enough trade down.
Mm-hmm.
The report that came out today is that it's rumored that the Cleveland Browns are offering their two first round picks for the number two spot to take Mariota.
Philly's also talking with
Tennessee, Phillies are also talking.
And so is San Diego.
I love Mariota to Philly.
I love Mariota to Philly too.
That to me is the best match.
It would just go back to what I said on like the third episode of this podcast, where it's just like Chip Kelly is just building an professional Oregon team,
which is just awesome.
Yeah.
I love that.
No, it's great.
I think it's great to watch.
Bradford is a bargaining chip.
Yes.
Oh yeah, definitely. He's not.
Would from the beginning whether they get Mariota or not. I don't think they drafted. I don't think they traded for Sam Bradford to make them their long-term starting option.
No.
Especially with how injury-prone he is. No, come on.
And just how the Eagles really have a potential to just be an explosive offense. You don't want him holding the keys to the car.
No, sir.
When you also look at...
It's also too slow.
Marcus Mariota, I've been watching
Thank
tape...
Thank you for saying Mariota. I even said it wrong. I've been, never get that right.
I've been watching tape of Mariota. I do believe that he can learn how to play in a pure pro-style offense. I don't think Ken Whisenhunt, as head coach of the Titans, wants to take on that project right now. I agree with Tyler. I think that he is a believer in Zach Mettenberger enough, at least enough, where you don't feel like you need to take. I mean, Mariota is not a must. Mettenberger could bust like a number two pencil this year. But what are you really, really losing? Especially if you trade that number two pick, what is it going to get you on the back end? You could if trading that pick away means that you can really scoop up some assets in this draft, I think it's definitely worth Tennessee to trade it away.
I'll tell you what it gets you based on this mock draft. If they were to do things the exact way that the Browns are projected to do, and they'd get the number 12 pick and get Danny Shelton, the nose tackle out of Washington.
Mm.
Which, let's be honest, they could use some
support.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh yeah,
and. Going along with that, you get the 19th pick with my man Melvin Gordon, running back out of Wisconsin.
I could see that. Unfortunately, they still have Dougie Martin under contract. I'm not saying Martin's good. Doug Martin's he's hideous, but he's still under contract. Or you trade him away, deal him.
I'd deal him.
But yeah, I guess. And then at the end of the day, if Tennessee's feeling like they want to hang on to that number two pick, which I don't think they will, I guess they'll go with Mariota. It would not be super difficult for me to see them taking a wide receiver.
Why not take Amari Cooper?
Amari Cooper, or this is pretty. It's tough to take an offensive lineman at the number two pick, but it wouldn't super surprise me if they reached and grabbed. If they're going to keep the number two pick, which I don't think they would do, but if they do, Brandon Scherff. Is about the only offensive lineman that's worth taking in the first round.
That's a stretch. I don't know.
I'm just saying for the purposes of them actually hanging on to the pick. I can't outside of the wide receiver talent.
Yeah,
I don't really know what else they're. I mean, they're desperate offensively, so it's either going to be an offensive lineman to keep Mettenberger upright, or it's going to be a receiver that you can use as an asset for Mettenberger. But I don't think they're taking Mariota. I just don't see it happening.
All right. Three is projected Dante Fowler Jr., outside linebacker out of Florida, to the Jaguars.
See, I have – and then at number four, do they have the Raiders with Amari Cooper?
Yeah.
I have those two picks switched. I think Jacksonville is going to do – I think it makes more sense for Jacksonville to take a pass rusher, but I feel like Jacksonville's their front office mindset is going to be – we've already got a pretty decent pass rush, which they do. That's about the only thing that the team has right now, especially defensively. I see them being like, I see them looking at Amari Cooper and thinking the Bortles to Cooper connection is too good to pass up.
Either way, I mean, I think Amari Cooper is a flat-out can't miss. I watched a lot of Alabama games this year.
I.
Amari Cooper is unbelievable good.
See.
I mean, he's just a really good receiver. I mean, personally, I'd love to see him at the Raiders. I think Derek Carr is better than Bortles, and I think I think Amari Cooper is a big receiver asset for either one of those guys, but I'd love to see I just kind of love the idea of the Raiders getting better, but I mean I think that having Derek Carr throwing the ball to Amari Cooper is just a really, really good combination.
Completely agree.
A lot
weird
upside.
Idea to have, man.
But I think the Raiders though are better served. They took Khalil Mack last year with their first pick. I think they follow suit, and they take an because from what I've been seeing, reading, hearing, Dante Fowler Jr. is probably the best defensive player in this draft, no question.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm.
A division that's barring anything that happens here in the next couple days or up until opening day kickoff, the AFC. West is going to shake out like this at quarterback. You got Derek Carr, then you've got Peyton Manning, Alex Smith, and Philip Rivers. Three of those guys, Manning, Rivers, Smith, are slower, older, and they're going to be sitting in that pocket. I think the Raiders are so much better served with their already young defense getting another great pass rusher to bum rush the shit out of those old dumpy quarterbacks. Sure. I just honestly think...
I see that, but I feel... I mean, the Raiders' offense is just so bad. I mean, I feel like they get another weapon that opens up options for them.
I think that... that's true. At the end of the day, it's really... I think there's upsides to...
Oh, yeah.
Either one, taking either one. I just think right now I've got those two switched.
Oh, yeah. Listen, I think whoever takes Amari Cooper's made a great move. That's
absolutely,
my point.
That's true.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to skip around a bit. Down to six. This is the first one that I somewhat disagree with. They're saying that the Jets are going to take Kevin White, wide receiver out of West Virginia. I still think he goes at number seven to the Bears. They have Trey Waynes, the cornerback out of Michigan State,
going to
the Bears.
I want him to fall to 11 so bad. I want the Vikes to take Trey Waynes so bad.
No, you don't. You want the Vikes to take Devontae Parker, the wide receiver out of Louisville.
I don't.
Teddy's former teammate.
I don't want it.
Why?
I like Devontae Parker.
I think that's a great pick.
I completely... Here's my thought as a Vikings fan.
Okay.
I am comfortable with Teddy taking a step forward this year without taking a big-name receiver at the first pick. I am 100% comfortable with Mike Wallace, Jarius Wright, Charles Johnson, Kyle Rudolph, throwing Adam Thielen, Cordarrelle Patterson. I'm comfortable with all that.
With Cordarrelle Patterson?
No, but I'm saying I'm comfortable. I'm saying I'm comfortable.
What does he set him fifth?
I'm saying I'm comfortable with that core group.
Okay.
I'm comfortable with that core group. At number 11, I want one of two things. I either want Brandon Scherff, who's apparently the best offensive lineman in the draft, to keep Teddy upright and in the pocket. Or I want Trey Waynes on the other side of Xavier Rhodes. Because you still, at the end of the day, you have to find a way to neutralize the Green Bay Packers offense is the reason why the Green Bay Packers are the best team in the NFC North. You gotta find a way to neutralize it.
I am
100%. If they take Devontae Parker, I'm not gonna be having a meltdown like I did last year with Johnny Football. I'll be fine with it. It's cool. No, they're former teammates. Devontae Parker looks great. He obviously has all the intangibles. I'm just saying, I think that there are just two needs. Having Devontae Parker isn't going to protect Teddy Moore from pass rushers. And I he's not going to...
It helps him with the deep ball, though. I guarantee that.
See, but I'm cool with Jarius Wright, Charles Johnson, and Mike Wallace. I think we got enough deep threats there.
I just mean from a training standpoint.
Oh, gotcha,
I think having his old teammate that he threw the deep ball to, I think he'll just get that timing and chemistry down more quicker. But I agree that a wide receiver is your most needed option.
And that's just where I'm at with it. Obviously, I know the Vikes were wanting desperately to trade AP and get a starting corner out of it. If that somehow happens before the draft or during the draft, then by all means, take Devontae Parker. Yeah. I'm totally or the best receiver available if somehow Kevin White falls or Amari falls. I don't see that happening, but if you're able to, at some point prior to draft or during draft, able to get a starting corner, great. Otherwise, I want it to be Trey Waynes or Brandon Scherff.
Gotcha. All right, down at 15 to Steve's San Francisco 49ers. We've got Eric Armstead, the defensive tackle out of Oregon. Any quick thoughts, Steve?
We got to go defense. We have to. I mean, like with the mass exodus we have. But I actually see us – we have 9 picks this year. I see us going mostly defense, and I actually think we're going to go with 9 picks. I say 7 of that be defense and then maybe 2 receivers. Maybe 1 receiver and 1 offensive
line. Right,
because
you lost
maybe.
Crabtree. Where did Crabtree go again?
He went to the Raiders.
Raiders.
Yeah,
I forgot Crabtree went to the Raiders.
Locker room cancer.
Yeah, maybe they don't need Cooper anymore.
We're going defense. And actually, from a bunch of articles that I've read, with that position in the draft being number 15, kind of being right in the middle, that more than likely would be the best available person for that position that would be available. Yeah. And looking at his highlights, it's like, you know what? I'm not too crazy about it because I know how much we're hurting at the cornerback position. We are hurt. So, I kind of wish we would go cornerback first round. Just my own selfish needs to alleviate that just because we're depleted as hell. But if that's who they go with and that's 100% who they're projected to take, fine by me. As long as we go defense and we start building back up, that's all that matters. I'm good with that.
You could also go Kevin Johnson, the cornerback out of Wake Forest, who's
at,
right
at 15.
Yeah. If the Dolphins are projected to take him at 14 right now, but if they don't, then he's certainly an option for you from a cornerback standpoint.
We're going defense either way, first round, and then
you have to.
We must.
All right. Don't need to really talk about it, but I think it's interesting that he's going this high at 17. The Chargers are projected to take Todd Gurley, the running back out of Georgia. I love this guy. I love Todd Gurley. I just think it's interesting that a guy who was injured all last year is going this high.
You know, actually, it's interesting. I know that the Patriots have been looking at him a lot, actually.
Yeah, they're not. He's not going to slip to 32.
No, he's not dropping that low. But, I mean, it's just like, you know, a lot of teams are looking at him who, mm-hmm. you know, need to shore up that. I mean, you know, yeah, he's been hurt, but I think it's worth the risk. When he's on, he is unbelievable.
Correct me if I'm wrong. He was an ACL injury,
yes.
Correct?
That's a bad
one. But here's the thing. Is the ACL really that bad anymore?
I mean, ask Derrick Rose.
Ask Navarro Bowman.
I mean, that's the thing, though. Like,
that's an ACL and MCL.
Well, I mean, but that's the thing. We'll see what happens with Navarro when he comes back. But we, you know, I mean, Rose continues to play, and up until obviously last game,
you have been spoiled when it comes to players and ACL injuries.
Tom Brady towards
Tom
ACL.
Also not a running back,
But I'm not saying
you're wrong for stating the question. I'm saying you've been spoiled with ACL recovery.
You have an optimism with ACLs that most of us don't have.
I'm just saying, I think it's the Adrian, like, maybe the conversation starts with Adrian Peterson. I'm saying since then, guys continue to come back from this and they continue to be effective. That's all. I guess it always depends on the player. It doesn't seem like ACL injuries are things that truly, truly scare scouts away anymore the
That's
way that
fair.
They used to. They don't completely end careers.
I completely agree. I mean, look at my guys. They picked up Darnell Dockett after missing a total season with an ACL tear.
So I
actually,
know.
Can I just say something really fast?
Sure.
Really, I can't believe Tyler just said this. First, in our friendship, in radio history, he literally said that in sports-related talk, in fact, you are spoiled. I've never heard anybody say that you're spoiled in any regard, in any Vikings or Twins or
Timberwolves.
Told
that to a Minnesota
when it
fan.
An amazing player's recovery from an ACL as quickly as it happened, as quickly he was back to 100%, yeah, it's an anomaly. And you'll even hear Stefania Bell from ESPN, who's an injury and physical therapy expert, be like, running backs and other players in the NFL are unfairly compared to Adrian Peterson these days because of how quickly he came back from an ACL injury.
What was the turnaround, by the way?
Well, he got hurt with probably, I think it was like either 2 or 3 weeks left in the 2011-2012 season, and then he was ready for on opening day on the 2012-2013.
Didn't he even make a little training camp?
He was in training camp, but they were not.
Well, I mean, he wasn't.
They weren't running him. That's
still huge.
Because I remember Vikings. Well, because I remember Vikings fans were having panic attacks watching him have sprint races uphill with Percy Harvin at training camp. We were like,
I'd be fucking freaking out too. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Then he came out and he was 9 yards short of breaking the single season rushing record.
That was the same year with Peyton Manning winning.
Right.
Biggest comeback player at the
right, both of them. Both of them had crazy comebacks.
Yeah.
All right. Let, let's real quickly touch on me and Christian's picks for this first round.
Yeah,
we should have done that. The past 3 years or so, I've been huge into Texas A&M football, just watching. I was watching Johnny Manziel and then watching what I thought was going to be a great freshman year out of Mr. Kenny Trill.
Oh, God.
And then he shat the bed 4 weeks in. So this excites me a little bit and also makes me nervous. At 29, my Colts are projected to take Cedric Ogbuhi, the offensive tackle out of Texas A&M. Hmm. If you are unfamiliar with him, you'll probably remember him as the guy who I believe he tore his ACL in the final college game of his career. So he is
coming off an
ACL right now. Makes me nervous.
If not for that, I like that as a tackle for the Colts.
Agreed.
I mean,
that's what we need
up front.
That's what I've been saying for months. It's what I've been saying to everyone who's like, hey, the Colts might be a favorite for a Super Bowl this year. I was like, well, okay, we have a lot of work to do, especially on the offensive. Trenches, yeah. Yeah. So ACL, this excites me. It makes me a little bit nervous. I'm kind of hoping we change our mind, and I'm kind of hoping the Broncos pass on as this is projected to take Jake Fisher, the offensive tackle out of Oregon, at 28. Kind of hoping the Colts end up being able to get him a little bit. As much as I love Texas A&M football, as much as I like Cedric, I'm too worried about
too
his
much
recovery.
Risk. Yeah.
Oh, and real quick, at 31, the dark horse, though I should say the black sheep of this draft, Mr. Doriel Green Beckham, the wide receiver, he's out of Miami. Where was he out of?
I think that's right.
Not out of Missouri. Out of Missouri, but he was dismissed before the end of last season. He's projected to go at 31 to the Saints, which,
makes sense.
They need another receiver. They need another guy who can catch the ball after trading Jimmy Graham away.
Oh, God.
I think the Saints are... I was going to say, I think the Saints... I think that was a big... In a roundabout way, a message to a lot of the veterans, Drew Brees included, we're going to start heading in a different direction here. I think the Saints are going to be a new look team here, a completely new look team here in a couple years.
What happens to Drew Brees? Does he get traded or just retire?
I think they play Drew Brees.
I think he's got two or three more years left at most anyway.
Yeah,
I mean,
quarterbacks are just going to be a total new thing in a couple of years. I mean, Manning's going to be gone, Brady's going to be gone, Breeze is going to be gone. I mean,
I just thought Breeze, Rivers, I just felt like Breeze.
Even Rodgers is getting up there.
Breeze looked so.
I mean, he's got one.
Oh, I know, I know. I'm just saying that he's not on the front half of his career anymore.
No, the benefit not. That Rodgers had over all these guys is he got to resting watch for Brett Favre for 4 years. So
yeah, but he also lost some of his young years too.
See, but I'm saying I think he was able to prolong and gain more longevity that way. Okay. Although he's been getting knocked around a little bit more here the last few years. So it'll be interesting to see.
That damn calf, man.
Yeah, I know, right?
Flaring up and booing.
All right, and finally, with the last pick, the 32nd pick of the first round.
They'll trade it away.
The Patriots are projected to take Randy Gregory, the outside linebacker from Nebraska.
That one's going away.
That one's going away.
No, that's not going to be a thing. Listen, as far as Patriots addressing their needs, I mean, I'm still in mourning for
fucking
Browner and Revis.
Belichick's probably already looking at some dudes in, like, the fourth and fifth rounds. Nobody's heard of. And
Or better yet, undrafted, and they come in and they have a Super Bowl ceiling interception.
Mother of God.
But, I mean, listen. The bottom line is this. Like, they just lost Darrell Revis and Brandon Browner. No draft is going to replace that. That was, I mean, I'm still not quite over it. It's just, you know, it's just the best one-night stand we've ever had, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just, hey, man.
Nothing's going to ever take it away from it, but Revis went back to his shitty boyfriend.
You got to see what it was like.
Oh, listen. We got what they came for.
Yeah, man.
But it's just, with them still on the team, we could have gone for it again. And I mean, it's just...
Sure.
We still can. We can. It's a long shot, though. I mean, it's so hard to repeat. I mean, it's just crazy difficult. We needed all the guns.
The Seahawks were 1 yard away from doing it.
Yeah, yes, I know.
And they didn't.
Bless us all.
Yeah. Tyler, anything else in the draft that looks interesting you'd like to talk about?
I'll just say a couple more quick little highlights. At 16, the Texans are projected to take Breshad Perriman, the wide receiver out of Central Florida, which I think is a great pickup, especially since they've, you know, gotten rid of one of their top two wide receivers recently. Thank you.
Gonna be started on
that Indy Houston game is gonna be awfully fun to watch.
It's gonna be.
We don't have any Texans fans in our little group here. We need to find a way to scoot one in here.
I suppose Paige
has no fucking clue what's going on.
Somebody from Houston might be interested. I'll see if we can rope him in for the one game.
There you go.
Corey, my buddy.
Steve's, you got to put up this
there
time.
There you
man.
go. No, that game's those games. If Jadeveon Clowney can actually find a way to be a factor this year,
that would be huge. Him and Watt
then
together.
It'll be interesting.
The Bash Brothers.
That's like going to be super interesting. Which makes if Jadeveon Clowney is going to be healthy, which the Colts have to assume means grabbing an offensive lineman is definitely up there. From what I've read, Tyler, maybe you've been following, obviously, Colts offseason, maybe who they've been looking at more closely. Outside of a run-stopping nose tackle, which it doesn't look like there's too many of them worth taking in the first round, outside of that kid from USC, who's probably not going to be available that late.
No.
I think that you got to take an offensive lineman.
We will. I'm not tripping about it too much. I said at 19, right now, the Browns are projected to take Melvin Gordon. Who knows if they'll even keep that pick.
Shouldn't they be sick of dudes named Gordon by now?
If the Browns are smart, just hang on to those two picks. Just hang on to your two first
picks.
They're
not smart. If the Browns were smart, though.
We talked about why they're called the Browns.
Yes.
At 22, the Steelers are projected to take Byron Jones, a cornerback out of Connecticut. They need all the defensive help they can get right now after all the retirees in the past couple months.
Yeah.
Who
are the Cowboys taking?
Landon Collins with the 27th pick, the strong safety out of Alabama. I think that's a good pickup.
Collins is pretty good, actually.
He is really good.
Yeah, I like that pick a lot.
It's going to be interesting to go back and look at this list after people have actually been
that's
drafted.
That's what's so much fun about it.
See how long people were in the surprise.
Where is this draft? Is this going to be Radio City? Or is there some?
No, it's Chicago.
Chicago.
Steve and I's old stomping grounds.
That is our old stomping
grounds. Steve and I's old stomping grounds.
Apparently the setup there is pretty cool.
Is it in the Chicago Theater?
It's in the theater district. I know that. I don't know if it's in Chicago.
That'd be pretty dope.
That'd be really dope.
That's where I graduated. Before the draft.
That is where you graduated. That's where I didn't graduate because I got my diploma in the mail and I didn't feel
I did too. But,
that's why I didn't go to the ceremony.
All
right. Well. So it's gonna be.
At least we got it. You know.
Yeah. Exactly, man. Hey.
That's what counts.
Reel it in.
I'm just saying. There's a lot of people out there who just don't get it. So I'm glad we did.
Way to step up.
Made our parents proud, you know? We all did.
We all did. Thanks, all right. Mom.
Don't thanks, this Dad. Guy. Thanks, Mom. Yet. Well, I mean, they're not dead yet. They're not. Knock on wood. Jesus Christ, Steve. Way to end things on a
You're the one pointing at the sky. They're still here.
I was.
You're
I was
still here, Mr.
No,
Mr.
I was doing. I was doing the Steph Curry celebration.
For when you guys are up
for
there.
For the fact that I got my diploma and graduated.
Well, yeah, we got it. Yeah, thanks.
God damn it.
I'm sorry. That's great.
I'm just going to start doing this podcast by myself.
Oh, man. Parachute.
Yeah, seriously.
That was a solid episode right until the last 30 seconds.
Everything just got so messed up.
Dumpster fire. We'll get it. We're going to have one of these days where it's just from top to bottom.
A pear-shaped dumpster with a fire coming out.
It's a pear-shaped dumpster with a fire coming out.
A garbage can with a microphone next to it and Jay Cutler's number on it.
That roughly sums up the last 30 seconds.
Buying him a drink for that one.
So this kind of went off the rails in the last 2 minutes.
Sure did.
You know what? Hey, guys, why don't you do all of these things that I'm about to list off to you? Why don't you follow us on Facebook, The 51-Yard Line? Why don't you follow us on Twitter at the 51-yard line? Why don't you follow us on Instagram at the 51-yard line? Why don't you go to the 51yardline.com, read what Drew wrote about Johnny Manziel, read what Christian wrote about something else, and then also what he wrote about his Carolina fandom. I don't remember what the first article you wrote
Kawhi
was because I was at work. Yeah, how he wants to blow Kawhi Leonard. He wrote 1,500 words
wants
on that.
To.
What Drew? What
trivia?
I do have a trivia question.
Yes! Oh, let's go. It's time to break the tie.
I actually had two, and then Steve mentioned something earlier, and it
you
ruined my
me
trivia
a
question.
Hand last week.
I went with Granny Chastain.
Carolina Panthers fan?
I wanted to go
Does your
Granny
love for
Chastain?
Carolina go to all Carolina sports?
It does not. Though I do like Cam Newton.
Guys,
yeah!
In honor of the NFL draft, I should say, welcome to another
51
installment
questions.
Of 51 Questions. If it's you are not questions. Caught up, questions. These three dudes are currently tied with 5 points each. This will possibly be a tiebreaker. Mm. In honor of the NFL draft, this is an NFL draft-related question.
Oh, God.
So, in the seven NFL drafts from 1998 to 2004, Six quarterbacks were selected number one overall. Who was that seventh player? Who was the only non-quarterback selected number one overall in this time frame?
From 98 to 07?
To 04.
04.
Seven drafts.
98 to 04. Cut.
There's only one.
Yes. Your choices are Keyshawn Johnson, Kijana Carter, Orlando Pace, Courtney Brown.
Carter.
Yeah.
Take a moment.
That's a good question. Can I get the four one more time?
Keyshawn Johnson, Keyshawn Carter, Orlando Pace, and Courtney Brown.
That's a good question.
I don't think it's...
All right, you don't have all night considering that there's dead air right now.
Yeah, man, I guess.
All right, Christian, go for it. What do you got?
Think it's Orlando Pace.
Okay.
Carter.
I want to go with Orlando Pace, but yeah, I'm going to go with Orlando Pace. I for some reason, like, I want to go with Brown, but no, I'm going with Orlando Pace. Final answer.
Guys, you are all still tied because none of you got the correct answer. It is Courtney Brown.
I should have gone.
Oh, shoot.
Courtney Brown, selected in 2000, number one overall.
The one guy I knew it wasn't was Keyshawn Johnson. I knew he wasn't a one.
Well, I was going to say, Keyshawn.
I thought he also went before.
I was going to say, I thought he went in like the 96, 97
That's
draft.
The trick to it.
Yeah. I didn't think he went in those years. That was my other
I point. Always give you guys one completely inaccurate answer just to
like
make
Hope
it a little...
Like Hope Solo last week.
Yes, exactly. But this one was a little bit harder than that.
Should have gone
Courtney Brown.
Damn it.
Number one overall pick in the 2000 NFL draft. Well, guys, you are all still tied with five. Five out of seven, I believe. So we got... got quite a bit to go, but
I wanted that one.
At the end of this contest, one of you will get, I don't know.
Credit.
I'll figure out some prize. I don't know.
NFL jersey.
Majority stake.
Hell yeah, man. I'll take one of those.
I'd do that.
Well,
depends on the jersey.
That's going to do it for us for another episode of 51 Yard Line. This was episode 18. Look for episode 19 next week, obviously. We'll be back to recap the fight, to recap the draft, to recap what I assume will pretty much be the end of the first round of the NBA playoffs.
Thank God.
It's been a hectic first round of the playoffs, man. It's hard to watch every single game. So for Steve Cravens.
Thanks for listening.
For Christian Schneider.
Let's go, Manny.
For the incorrigible Drew Willers.
Like, listen, share. Thanks for listening, guys.
I still don't quite know if incorrigible is a good thing. I'm pretty sure it's actually a bad thing. Probably. But I'm going to keep calling
you
that.
I've heard many women call James Bond that, so it should be okay.
It's actually a bad thing then. Yeah.
Before or after?
That's my question.
James before Bond?
Not good then.
Comparisons.
Whatever, you got it in the end.
Enjoy it.
Anyway.
Yeah, I forgot my own name. I'm Tyler Berry. We'll see you in a week. Bye.
Narf.